Good morning. My name is Carmen, and I will be your event specialist today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the web conference for AEP Ohio CBP Auction. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that today's web conference is being recorded. You can ask text questions throughout the presentation. Locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen. Select all panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question. If you experience any technical difficulties during today's event, press star zero on your telephone keypad to be connected with an operator. You can also use the chat panel to communicate an issue directly to me, the host. At this time, I would like to turn today's program over to Benjamin Chee from NERA. You may begin.
Thank you. On behalf of AEP Ohio, I'd like to welcome everyone to today's webcast. Again, my name is Benjamin Chee. I'm from NERA. And today's webcast is about the AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process, or CBP. This is the third auction under AEP Ohio's CBP, also known as the September 2014 auction. Together with me today is Dr. Chantal Lacasse, who will be presenting. She is also from NERA. NERA is the auction manager for the AEP Ohio's CBP. And with us as well are representatives of AEP Ohio who will assist in responding to questions that require subject matter expertise. Before I start the presentation, I'll have just a couple of points here and a disclaimer. So please note that any statements that we make here in this presentation describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only, and they are qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. So the CBP, or the competitive bidding process, is a process that has been approved by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, or PUCO, and the governing documents include the PUCO's decisions in AEP Ohio's second Electric Security Plan, or ESP2, as well as in AEP Ohio's competitive bidding process, or CBP. The case numbers are listed here, and they are 11346 ELSSO. 11348 ELSSO for the second electric security plan, as well as 123254 ELUNC for the CBP. The governing documents will also include the documents filed in the CBP proceedings, which are the bidding rules for the auction, or what we call the auction rules, or the CBP rules. The standard contract that will be used in the CBP, also known as the Master Energy Supply Agreement, or MESA, the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, as well as the communication protocols. Two things I will highlight for you here on this slide one. The first is that we're going to use a couple of acronyms throughout this presentation, and you'll find most of them here on this slide. So the second Electric Security Plan is ESP2. We have the Competitive Bidding Process, or CBP, as well as the Master Energy Supply Agreement, or MESA. The other thing to highlight for you is right at the bottom of this page, you can find all the governing documents on the CBP website. Here on slide two, we have a screenshot of the CBP website. The CBP website is a central source of information for bidders. I will highlight a few items here for you. If you look at the left navigation bar on the website, I will highlight three sublinks. The first is a link that says Contact Us or Register. This is for you to sign up for email alerts as well as information that will be sent via email to you when a deadline is coming or when a document has been posted. If you have not done that already, I do encourage you to sign up using that Contact Us link on the website. The second link that you want to take note of is the Ask a Question link under contact us, the sublink, ask a question. This allows you through a web form to ask your questions regarding the CBP or the option. All questions typically processed with a 2 working day turnaround will answer you via email, and to be fair to all bidders, all Q&As are subsequently posted to the website in the FAQ section without identifying any party that has asked the questions. And the third item that I like to highlight is the place where you can register for an application account. That's the last link on that page where you see register for an application account. This is where you will sign up to get an application account. The application process is done online. Just one note here, returning bidders do not need to apply for a new account if you are a returning bidder that have participated in a prior auction. You can reuse your credentials from those prior auctions and we'll send you a reminder regarding your access to the application website. Over onto slide 3, the CBP website is maintained by NERA as the auction manager. NERA will be the main point of contact for bidders in this process. If you have questions, do not direct it to the Commission or representatives of AP Ohio if it relates to the auction process or the CBP, but do direct it to NERA as the auction manager. This will ensure that the CBP rules as approved by the Commission are followed and will help us ensure that bidder qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly and all bidders have fair and equal access to information. As the auction manager, we will administer the auction and will present the results to the Commission. On slide 4 here, we have the agenda for today. Today's presentation will be broken up into 5 parts. The first 2 parts, we will provide an overview of the auction process. We will describe the products as well as key contract terms. Then, the latter part of the presentation will talk about the practical aspects of the auction process, what the requirements are, how you qualify to participate in the auctions, how you submit bids in the auction, and finally where you find information to help you participate in the auction. Over on this slide 5, I will just stop here real quick with one housekeeping item. So first, as we proceed in this presentation, we'll respond to questions as we go, as we find it practicable, but we will certainly stop at 2 points in the presentation. So the first deliberate place where we will stop to take questions is after part 2, where we talk about the product design and the contract. This is around slide 23-24 of the presentation, and then the other deliberate point where we will stop to take questions is at the end of the presentation. Questions will be taken in writing, and you can do that through the WebEx interface. And to do that, you will locate the Q&A box on the right side of your screen, select all panelists in the Ask box to a drop-down menu, and type in your question and hit Send to submit your questions. If you have relevant slide numbers that you'd like to reference in your questions, do insert that in your question as well, and we will certainly give these same instructions again when we get to those stopping points. We'll start with an overview of the process. We'll start on slide 7 here with some regulatory background. So this process, this CBP, began way back in March of 2012 when AP Ohio filed its ESP2 plan, and the ESP2 plan is for procurement of supply for its SSO customers, meaning its non-shopping customers that take retail generation from AP Ohio. The Commission issued its decision, its opinion, and its order regarding the ESP2 application on August 8th of 2012. On the heels of that ESP2 decision, AAP Ohio filed its plan to establish a CBP. That's a CBP petition that was filed on December 21st, 2012. And the commission issued its decision on the CBP on November of 2013 with some elements of the CBP that went into rehearing. On January of this year, the commission has issued an entry on the rehearing element regarding the AAP Ohio CBP. You can find all the relevant orders on the CBP website. Over on to slide 8. This product that we are featuring in under the CBP is an energy-only load-following product. So it's an energy-only, meaning that it is not full requirements. It's a load-following product, means it's a slice-of-system product. We are responsible for a percentage of the energy requirements of SSO customers, not a fixed megawatt of energy, but it will be measured in a percentage basis. There are four auctions scheduled, four energy-only auctions that are scheduled under the CBP. We have concluded two of them. We are again in the third round of four rounds. So this is also known as the September 2014 auction. The first auction was held in February of this year. It was for a 10% of the energy requirements of SSO customers for a 14-month term. The second and the third auction is for 25% each of the energy requirements of SSO customers for a 7-month term starting in November. And we have a last auction scheduled for November of this year. That's for the remaining 40% of the energy requirements of SSO customers for a 5-month term starting in January of 2015. Over onto the next slide. Here we have the results of the last auction. It was held on May 6. The commission decision to accept the results was issued on May 7. In that auction, there were 11 bidders that were registered, of which 6 won. There were 10 rounds in that auction. The delivery period is the same as the delivery period for this auction, which is November 1st of this year through May 31st of 2015. There were 25 tranches being solicited, and we have fully procured all 25 tranches. The auction has a starting price range of between $50 per megawatt hour to $65 per megawatt hour, and it closed at the bottom of that starting price range, which is $50 per megawatt hour. So these are the results here for your reference from the last auction, the May 2014 auction. Some reminders as we are headed into the September 2014 auction. So first, in terms of the pre-bid security, there is not going to be any additional pre-bid security that is required in this auction. To participate, you simply put up the minimum pre-bid security of $500,000 per tranche to provide that in the form of a letter of credit or cash in the part 2 stage, and I'll go through that in some detail later on. In the first auction, some of you would know that there is a requirement for additional pre-bid security in the form of a letter of intent to provide a guarantee or a letter of reference for some bidders, and this is again not the case for this September 2014 auction. The second point here is that the application process is all done online, and for returning bidders there's a streamlined approach or process where some of your information will be pre-populated so that you do not need to fill them in again. Some of your PGM information that was submitted previously will be retained. However, there's going to be some to-dos, whether you're returning or whether you're a new bidder. You will still have to make some certifications and refresh your financial information. For returning bidders, we will be sending out a reminder about your login credentials. If you have not received that yet, you will see that shortly, and you will have access to the application account using your login credentials when the application, when the Part 1 application window opens. Over on slide 11, a couple of things that are new or updated in this September 2014 auction process. I just want to highlight one thing for you, which is on the schedule. We have recently posted a affirmative schedule to be used in this auction process for this September 2014 auction, and that was posted on the website on May 30th, end of last month, on the website. A few things we're doing differently this time around. First is that we're shortening the Part 1 and Part 2 application windows. You still have about 3 weeks to submit your Part 1 and Part 2 applications on the online portal. And returning bidders are now familiar with the requirements as well as the web application, and that's one of the reasons why we are shortening that window. And in line with that, we are also delaying the announcement for the megawatt measure as well as the minimum starting price and the maximum starting price. We'll make that announcement sometime 1 week into the Part 1 window, which is not today, which is what we typically do. And this is again in that same vein to minimize any price movements between when we make the announcement and when the start of the auction will take place. And I'll circle back with details on the schedule later on slide 14. Over on this slide, slide number 12, this slide addresses the load following aspect of the product. So again, we have said the CBP is to procure supply for SSO customers. These are, again, non-shopping customers. SSO customers are those customers that take retail generation service from AEP Ohio. And as we have said, this is a energy-only product, which means that bidders must deliver energy. This is for physical delivery of energy to the AEP load zone. And a tranche is a percent of the energy requirements of SSO customers, and you'll be responsible to provide that percentage of energy requirements of SSO customers. And again, this is slice of system, which means that this is not by customer class. For this auction, one tranche is equal to 1% of the energy requirements of SSO customers. And as you can see on this slide, at the bottom of this slide, supply will be divided into tranches. A tranche, again, is a percent of the energy requirements, and in this auction for a delivery period of 7 months, from November of this year through May of next year, we're looking for 25 tranches, each corresponding to 1%. Over on slide 13, multiple tranches of a single term will be featured in each auction. So for this auction, as I said, there will be 25 tranches that are being solicited. So 25 tranches for a 7-month term that runs from November of this year through May of 2015. That's what we mean when we say the auction will feature multiple tranches of a single term in this auction. The auction format is a descending clock auction, and it will proceed in multiple rounds. So the way it works is that in each round, the auction manager will announce a price, we call that the going price, and in each round, suppliers will have the ability to state how many tranches you would like to supply at that going price that is announced by the auction manager. And if there is excess supply, meaning that there is more tranches bid than tranches needed, then the auction will continue and the price will tick down in the next round. And the latter part of this slide, the last two bullets, basically gets at the point that not all descending clock auction works the same. So in this last two bullets, we just want to highlight two elements for you. of the descending clock option for the AEP Ohio CBP. The first is that there will be no sealed bid round. As you withdraw tranches from one round to the next throughout the option, you will be asked to provide exit prices as you withdraw your tranches. The second point is that through this option, there will be one single clearing price. When the option closed, there will be one price and all bidders will be paid based on this single clearing price. Over onto this slide 14, here we have the schedule of key events and milestones for this September 2014 auction. So under this process, I will highlight one thing up front, which is there's an optional process. It's not mandatory, but an optional process where we will accept alternate forms of guarantee. And this applies to bidders that cannot use the standard form and have a guarantee used in a normal course of business, substantially different from the standard form. To submit your alternate form of guarantee for considerations, you should take a look at the website. There are minimum requirements to be met. And the deadline for this is on June 26, 2 days from now. And for the rest of the milestones and key events, I will sort of work from the end in mind. So the first thing to point out is that the auction will start September 9. That's the starting day of the auction. And there is going to be a two-part application process. The part one window starts on July 10. It ends on July 31st, that's the part one date. And so, you know, for the part one application, the first step really is to apply for an application account, as I have said, before you can start submitting your part one application. And all bidders will have access to their account, application account, starting on July 10, the start of the part one window. And for those bidders that have submitted qualification materials through the part one application process to become qualified bidders, you'll be notified of your status on the part one notification day of August 5th. Part two window begins on August 6th and it concludes at noon on the part two date, which is on August 28th. And that is for qualified bidders to submit information and a pre-bid letter of credit or cash to be registered as bidders to participate in the auction. You'll be notified of your status on a Part 2 notification date of September the 3rd. Registered bidders will then have the ability to practice all aspects of the bid submission process in the trial auction, and that is going to be held on Thursday, September the 4th, before the actual auction date on September 9. And in terms of key announcements, we have that on the right side of this slide. July 17 is when we will announce to you in the affirmative the tranche target, the tranche size, the megawatt measure, as well as importantly the range of the starting price. Will provide you the minimum starting price and the maximum starting price. The range will be where, in that range, will be where the round one price of the auction will start. The round one price itself will be announced to you on September 4th. And in addition to that, on August 19, we'll make one announcement on the seasonal factors as well as any updates to the megawatt measure. Over on to this slide, as I have mentioned, slide 15, I have mentioned to you that the application process is done online and there's going to be a two-part application process. So what the process is about is really, in the part one, is for bidders to submit supporting documentation and some information so that you can be qualified as bidders in the process. The part two is for you to submit indicative office and additional certifications so that you can be registered as bidders. The Part 1 window starts July 10, ends at noon on July 31st. Part 2 starts August 6, ends on August 28th. And how the process works is that each application process is a what you call, and you will hear later on in this presentation, as a two-submission process. And really how it works is that you will be required to sign up for an application account on a website. Once you have access to the application account, you will fill out some information on the website. Once we have sufficient information through the website, we will then send you customized signature pages for you to then sign, print, scan, and then upload to the website. That's the second submission process. So the first submission process, as I said, is just for you to fill out information on the website. Second submission is for you to receive your signature pages, sign them, and then scan them and upload them to the website. You'll be also required to upload any supporting documents. In a Part 1, for example, you'll be asked to provide PGM pages, signature pages to agreements, and as well any financial or credit supporting documents. In the Part 2 stage, certainly you will be asked to scan your signature pages. The only hard copy items that will require of you throughout this process is the hard copies of the fully executed pre-bid letter of credit or any cash that is to be wired to AP Ohio's account to support your bids. Besides that, no hard copies of application forms or supporting documents will be required. In terms of the post-auction procedures, so you know, the auction results are contingent on the commission approval. And once the auction has closed, the auction manager, NERA, will submit to the BUCO a confidential report that summarizes the bid results within the same day as the close of the auction. The BUCO will then have 2 working days after the close of the auction to decide whether to accept or reject the auction results, and certainly if the commission does not act within this window, then the auction results are deemed accepted. Historically, I would point out for you that the BUCO has made its decision on the day after the auction closed. So instead of waiting for the 2 full working days, they have historically made their decision within a day after the close of the auction. And after the close of the auction, so you know in terms of the timing of when things must occur, the MESA, the Master Energy Supply Agreements, must be fully executed within 3 days of the commission decision. And all creditworthiness requirements under the MESA must be met within that 3 days. And certainly after the BUCO has made its decision, they may also publicly release the auction clearing price and the names of the winning bidders from the auction as well. One item I want to flag for you here is that when we say that the NISA must be fully executed and all creditworthiness requirements must be met within the 3 days, if you are a returning bidder or an existing supplier, even if you have signed a MESA in the past, you'll be required to execute a new MESA for any additional tranches. Now we'll enter into Part 2 of this presentation. Here we'll just flesh out some of the details of the product as well as contract terms. So you know, supplier obligations are all described in the MESA. Here we're just highlighting some of the elements of the MESA for you. So do download the MESA from the website and review the contract terms there. So over on slide 18, here we flesh out some details on the fact that this product is both a load following product as well as an energy only product. So as we have said earlier, the product will be a slice of system energy product, energy only product, for a fixed percent of the energy requirements of customers. This is what we call the energy load. And because it is not a full requirements product, I'll highlight three things here for you on this slide, slide 18. First, AP Ohio will remain the load serving entity for its FSO customers. That means as the load serving entity, AEP Ohio will not be transferring the load over to energy suppliers. Energy suppliers will then be providing energy supply as a wholesale energy sale to AEP Ohio through what we call the IBT or internal bilateral transaction. This is accomplished through the PJM in schedule, and we'll flesh this out a little bit more in the next couple of slides. In terms of supplier obligation, this slide fleshes out the energy only aspect of the product. So under the MESA, energy to for SSO customers must be delivered to the AEP load zone, and suppliers will bear all costs that are associated with this responsibility. And because it is not full requirements, you will not be responsible for some of the services that are typically imposed on LSEs or load serving entities, which are capacity, transmission, ancillary services, or renewable obligations. Over onto this slide, because this is not a full requirements product, and importantly, this is a load following product, energy only load following product, we highlight for you a few items that will affect the load following aspect of the product. So again, the CBP is for SSO customers, customers that have not switched to a CRES supplier or competitive retail energy supplier, and non-shopping customers that take retail generation service from AEP Ohio. These SSO customers, what is included in this, to be very precise, is that they will include PIT customers as well as special contract customers. And for clarity, this will exclude any replacement energy provided to interruptible service customers during AEP Ohio requested interruptions. Again, it will include PIT as well as any special contract customers. Over onto this slide, slide 21, this slide addresses how load following energy will be scheduled in PJM. So under the MESA, suppliers will provide energy, as I said, as a wholesale energy sale to AP Ohio through an internal bilateral transaction. And through the in-schedule system, AEP Ohio and each supplier will bilaterally establish and confirm a contract, and the contract will have the following attributes. So first, AEP Ohio will be designated as the buyer, energy supplier as the seller. Second, the schedule confirmation type will be designated as unilateral buyer. Such AEP Ohio will have the unilateral schedule confirmation rights for all schedules between buyer and seller. And the sink, as well as the source, will be the delivery point, which is the AEP load zone. Pricing will be designated as the day ahead, so that settlement of schedules will occur at the day ahead pricing for each hour. And lastly, service type will be, as I said, an internal bilateral transaction. Over on to slide 22, this slide addresses how you'll be paid as a supplier under the MESA. There are two components here. First, there is a price component, and second, there is a volume component. So in terms of price, the price, as I said earlier, the auction will determine a single clearing price. The price you're going to be paid will be based on that price, and more precisely, it will be the auction clearing price times what we call a seasonal factor, which we will announce later on August 19. And in terms of the volume, that's what is covered on the latter half of this slide. So in terms of the volume for the initial settlement purposes, AP Ohio will determine a delivery schedule. They will enter that schedule via the in-schedule system, generally on the day following delivery using best available PGM data. Through that process, there will be no need for supplier confirmation, and the sum of the quantities that are scheduled on this process for the entire month, that will be what we call the estimated monthly energy share under the MISA, and that will be the initial settlement volumes that you'll be that will be used to pay you. And secondly, in terms of the volume component, all volumes will be reconciled and true up to actual data, and will be corrected for estimation, billing, metering, and other errors. And the final trued up data is what we call the final hourly energy share. And all these are explained in section 6 of the MISA. Over on slide 23 here, this slide lays out for you the credit requirements under the MISA. So you know, there's going to be two requirements under the MISA, and there's going to be separate unsecured credit lines associated with these two credit requirements. I'll start with the requirements first, and then I'll tell you how it works. So the requirements, there are two of them, as I said. The first requirement is what we call the independent credit requirement, or ICR, and the second requirement is what we call the mark-to-market exposure. And associated with these requirements are two separate unsecured credit lines. For the ICR, is we have the ICT, or the independent credit threshold, which is the unsecured line that is tied to that, and for the mark-to-market, we have the credit limit. And so you know how the process works, what this is about. We'll just unpack this for you. So for each of these requirements, AP Ohio will grant to the supplier, energy supplier, a credit line that is based on the credit rating or the credit rating and tangible net worth of the credit support provider. That's meaning to say either the bidder or the guarantor, and any exposure, any of these credit requirements that exceeds the credit line that is granted to the supplier, then the supplier must meet that exposure by providing a performance assurance letter of credit or cash. If you're relying on a guarantor, you must provide an executed guarantee to AEP Ohio to be granted these unsecured credit lines. And this is laid out for you more fully in Section 5 of the MISA. The ICR, Independent Credit Requirement, is just an amount required per tranche, and it declines throughout the term of the MISA. And the mark-to-market is just a based on the difference between the price of the prevailing market on a valuation date and the market price in effect on date the auction closed. So these are the requirements, these are the credit lines that will be granted to suppliers. And again, all these are laid out in the MISA, and specifically for the credit requirements, it's laid out in Section 5 of the MISA. And at this time, I will pause to take questions in the first two parts of the webcast.
To submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen, select All Panelists in the Send To box, type in your question, and click Send to submit your question. You will now be placed on a music hold for just a moment while our presenters review any questions. We will return momentarily. Go ahead, Mr. Chi.
Thank you. At this time, we're not seeing any questions, so we'll proceed to the next part of our presentation. I'll turn this time over to Dr. Chantal Akas. We'll talk about the practical aspects of the auction process. Dr. Akas?
Thanks very much, Mr. Chi. We'll start the second part of the presentation by talking a little bit in more detail of the application process. There's a few things that were mentioned in the first part of the presentation. First, the application process is online. And second, there are two parts to the application process, part one and part two. So I'll go into a little bit more detail about that. But first, for bidders that have not participated previously, you will need to be able to participate in the application process online to register for an account. There are two ways in which you can register for an account. The first one was mentioned already. It's to click on the link on the website, aapohiocbp.com, the last link on the left-hand navigation bar, to register for an application account. You will be asked to provide basic information, like the name of the company, and also a primary contact, first, last name, phone number. Or, alternatively, you can provide the same information by email to us. If you want to communicate to us by email, you can do so at the following email address, aap-cbp@nira.com, aap-cbp@nira.com. As was mentioned previously, for returning bidders, we will be sending a reminder of your login credentials, as well as some specific instructions. You will receive those by email from the auction manager in time for the start of the Part 1 window on July 10th. So to go through the steps again, especially for bidders that have not participated in the past, you will then register for an account by one of those two methods. You will receive login credentials from us, that is, a username, password. For returning bidders, those will be the same as the login credentials from previous auctions. You will also receive instructions for submission of your materials online and information regarding the deadlines. Once you have that information and once the Part 1 window is open, you will be able to log in to the application website and submit your materials, log in using the username and the password. I'll go now in a little bit more detail regarding the Part 1 and the Part 2 application in two steps, talking about the requirements for each portion of the application process, and also talking about the process by which you will be submitting your materials online. Talking about the Part 1 application first, the requirements for that, and that's for interested parties to submit their materials to become qualified bidders, the requirements for that are fairly standard. So to start, you will be providing contact information. Contact information for a representative, that's the individual with whom we will be communicating during the auction, and that represents the applicant during the auction. You will be providing contact information also for a legal representative in Ohio, and that's an individual or company that agrees to accept service of process on your behalf. And I said we'll be communicating with the representative, but we will also be communicating in terms of electronic communication with your nominees, who are additional individuals on your bid team. So all the notification coming from us will be sent not only to the representative, but also to the nominees through email. As far as new bidders are concerned, new bidders will have to provide all this information anew. Returning bidders will either amend this information with any updates or confirm that the information that was submitted prior remains valid. The second requirement that is provided on this slide are the PJM requirements, namely A bidder must have a PJM account and be qualified as a market buyer or seller in PJM. New bidders will provide this information, or returning bidders, again, will confirm that the prior information that's submitted is correct. So a bidder must either be qualified as a market buyer or seller at the time the application materials are submitted, or be able to certify that they will be able to be qualified as a market buyer and seller by the time the supply period starts. Other requirements of the Part 1 application include providing some certification to agree to the terms under which the CBP auction is being conducted. That includes agreeing to the terms of the Master Energy Supply Agreement, so the standard contract that is used by all bidders. To agree also to the CBP rules, which provide the bidding rules for the auction. And also agree to keep information that's related to the auction confidential. A applicant also provides financial information and submits to a creditworthiness assessment. That information includes annual and quarterly financial statements, credit ratings, and it may also include, for foreign applicants or applicants that have foreign guarantor, additional information. Now note that none of this information is provided in hard copy at physical email as the physical address, but rather all these documents can be submitted online as well through an upload to the application website. Finally, and this is optional, you may submit requests for modification to pre-bid credit instruments, and that would be also submitted via upload to the application website. And you would submit a red line of the applicable pre-bid credit instruments to provide your suggested modification. Any modification that would be accepted for the count of one bidder is also made available to all bidders on an optional basis. All of the requirements that I just spoke about have to be fulfilled by both new and returning bidders alike. And both new and returning bidders must fill in and provide those documents through the online Part 1 form. This slide just provides a picture of what the online Part 1 form looks like and what the initial certification looks like. So each portion of the Part 1 form is a separate page online in which you will be submitting your information and uploading documents. Now, one important feature of the online application process is that it's really a two-step process in the sense that you will submit that information and upload the documents that we just discussed, and you will then receive from the auction manager some signature pages, that is, any portion of the Part 1 form that requires a signature will be returned to you, and you will then be able to sign that personalized, customized signature page, scan that customized signature page, and then upload that document to the application website. So that really allows the complete process from submitting the information to providing your documents such as financial information to also providing your signature on various portions of the application such as some certifications to provide all of those documents through upload to the application website. So on this slide are the various portions of the Part 1 application that may require a signature and may require you to upload them to the application website. For new bidders, you will be required to provide a designation of who will serve as the representative to represent the applicant in the auction process. Returning bidders for which the representative does not change can simply here confirm their prior information. Same thing for the designation of the legal representative in Ohio. Both new and returning bidders will need to sign a customized signature page that provides the responsibility of the representative and that have various certifications that are customized to the applicant. There are two additional signature pages that are optional depending on your specific situation. One is the nomination form, which is the form that is used to name nominees. So these additional individuals on your bid team that will receive all electronic communications from the auction manager. And finally, there is a form for those applicants that are part of a bidding agreement in terms of which entity in the bidding agreement will fulfill the credit worthiness requirement of the auction. So again, the process is to get the account so that you can access the application website, fill in your information, and upload your documents to the Part 1 form, at which point we will customize those signature pages for your use, return them to you. You can have them signed, scanned, and uploaded to the application website. The Part 1 application, just as a reminder, is due on July 31st, and you will be notified a few days later on August 5th of whether or not your Part 1 application was successful. If it is successful, you will then have become a qualified bidder for the CBP auction. The second part of the application process is for you to become a registered bidder, or to be registered as a bidder in the auction. There are four main requirements to the Part 2 application: submitting an indicative offer, submitting pre-bid security, and as we've mentioned before, for this auction, there is no additional pre-bid security, so the pre-bid security is simply in the form of a letter of credit or cash. To make certifications, and those include certifications to ensure compliance with the rules on associations and the handling of confidential information. And the Part 2 application does include some additional certifications as well that we'll talk about in a moment. Now, the requirements for the Part 2 are the same for new and for returning bidders. So I'll talk to each of these requirements in turn and make a few points along the way. So the first one is an indicative offer. The indicative offer is a number of tranches at the minimum starting price, a number of tranches at the maximum starting price. And you see here a screenshot of what the interface looks like in terms of being able to input that number of tranches as your indicative offer at the minimum starting price and the maximum starting price. Now, the indicative offer at the maximum starting price should really be the maximum number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at that price, since it's going to determine two things. It's going to determine the amount of pre-bid security that's going to be required with the Part 2 application, and it's also going to determine the initial eligibility for a bidder in the auction. And what that means is that it's going to determine the number of tranches that a bidder can bid in round one of the auction. And as we'll see later on, a bidder can never increase the number of tranches that it can bid throughout the auction. Therefore, that indicative offer at the maximum starting price does determine the maximum number of tranches that a bidder can bid any time during the auction. So that has to be chosen very carefully. The amount of pre-bid security that's required with the Part 2 application is in proportion to that indicative offer at the maximum starting price. We mentioned there was no additional pre-bid security, so it's simply $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price in the form of a letter of credit or cash. Now, in placing that indicative offer, there may be constraints that a bidder is under. There are two types of constraints or low cap. The first one is a constraint for each auction, and that's that a bidder cannot bidder win more than 80% of the tranches available at the start of the auction, so 25 tranches for this upcoming auction. The second constraint is not for particular auction, but rather is across all auction under the CBP, and that's a credit-based tranche cap that is determined on the basis of credit ratings as provided in the table that you see here. So that's the indicative offer, and we've talked a little bit already about the pre-bid security, $500,000 per tranche of the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. There's no additional pre-bid security again for this auction. So finally, there are certifications that must be provided with the Part 2 application. A portion of these are to certify compliance with the association and confidential information rules. So for example, you would be asked to certify that you are not associated with another qualified bidder, or provide an explanation if you cannot make that certification. What associated with means, basically one bidder is associated with another if they have ties that prevent them from competing vigorously one against the other, for example, if they're sister companies. There are other certification as part of those rules, for example, keeping information related to the auction confidential. And there are other additional certifications as well, including agreeing that bids in the auction will become a binding obligation on the bidder under the terms of the standard contract, and also agree not to assign any rights that you will have acquired as a registered bidder to another entity. So those are all part of the certifications that you will have to make as part of the Part 2 application. The Part 2 form is available online, and there's a screenshot of what it will look like. Again, for each of the Part 2 application, you will have a page in the online Part 1 form, and you will be entering your information in that Part 2 form. Again, it's a two-step process. Once you enter that information, you will receive customized signature pages from us on the basis of the certification that you are able to make. And once you have received that signature page, you will be able to upload that to the application website. So all bidders, new and returning bidder alike, will be entering that information, receive that customized form from us, and be able to, after signing it and scanning it, upload it to the application website. For bidders that submit cash as pre-bid security, as pre-auction security, you will be required to provide instructions for the return of cash, and you will also be able to upload that to the application website. So that means we're very serious about saying that the process is online, in the sense that the only hard copy document that you are required to submit for purposes of the application is a pre-bid letter of credit, if you do choose to submit your pre-bid security using a pre-bid letter of credit rather than cash. So that's an overview of the application process. I mentioned the date for the Part 1 application that was due July 31st. The Part 2 applications will be due a few weeks later on August 28th. In both cases, you will be notified within a few days whether your application is successful. If you are successful with the Part 2 application, you will become a registered bidder in the auction. And at that point, you will be provided with a bidder user manual for auction parameters, be able to participate in the trial auction for registered bidders to prepare you for the auction due to begin on September 9th. This next part of the presentation is to provide a little bit of detail in terms of bidding in the auction. So there's two parts to that. One are the auction mechanics, as explained further by the CBP rules. The other is the auction process of what happens after the auction, and then a few notes on how to best be prepared for the actual bidding by talking a little bit about the bidding methods, so the bidding online, which is the primary method, as well as the backup method through phone. So first, talking about the auction mechanics, it was mentioned that we are using a descending clock auction, which is a multiple round auction process. Each round is going to have three phases. So there's a portion of the round with a certain predetermined number of minutes in which suppliers can submit their bids, and that's called the bidding phase. So again, a bid here is simply a statement of how many tranches a supplier is willing to supply at the price given for the round, which is called the going price. In terms of the price for round one, the auction manager will be informing all successful bidders in the Part 2 application, so the registered bidders, of that price for round one 3 days prior to the start of the auction. So during that bidding phase, bids are submitted. Once the bidding phase closes, then the auction manager tabulates the results of the round's bidding phase that just ended and calculates the price for the next round. In the reporting phase of the round, information flows back to bidders, namely the going price that will be in the next round, as well as an excess supply range that in terms of the excess of the number of tranches bid to the number of tranches available in the auction at that point in time. So that's kind of the general structure. I'll go a little bit more into detail about bids in round one and then bids in subsequent round. So in round one, it's very easy. Bid is simply a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to supply at that round one price that's announced 3 days prior to the start of the auction. One constraint, the bidder cannot bid more than its initial eligibility. And remember that that initial eligibility is determined by your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. It's that number of tranches that you will be entering in your Part 2 application. And again, because a bidder cannot increase the number of tranches that it bids throughout the auction, then it means that it also determines the maximum number of tranches that you can bid during the auction as a whole. One thing to note before I talk about what's different in terms of bidding in round two and subsequent round is that there is a possibility for a reduction in the tranche target. So the tranche target for this auction is 25 tranches. However, if there is insufficient supply for the tranches to ensure competitive bidding, then there is discretion to reduce the tranche target. There is criteria that could lead to such reduction. Those are determined prior to the auction, but they are not announced to bidders. Once certain pre-specified criteria have been met, then the discretion to reduce that tranche target will be eliminated. So we talked about the fact that there were three phases to a given round: bidding phase, calculating phase, and a reporting phase. In the reporting phase, such as in the reporting phase for round one, you will see the next round price, that is the going price for round two. You will also see a range of excess supply. What that means is there's going to be a range, as in this example, 51 to 55 tranches. The exact amount of excess supply lies somewhere in the interval that's provided to bidders. And of course, each bidder also sees the results of its own bid, but has no information about other people's bids, identities, or eligibilities in the auction. Now, I'll note here that there's going to be several examples throughout the presentation, and the prices that we're using, the excess supply ranges that we are using, are really just illustrative at this point. So, but I did talk about range of excess supply and the fact that prices go down. When the prices go down, the amount by which they go down is called a decrement. And generally, the decrement is going to be related to the amount of excess supply that's left in the auction. Namely, the greater the excess supply, the greater the decrement, so the greater the amount by which the price is going to go down from one round to the next. Now, all of these parameters, the formulas for the determination of the decrement, tables for determination of the excess supply ranges that we will use during the auction, all that information is provided in the bidder user manual. And to remind you of that, the bidder user manual is provided to bidders that have a successful Part 2 application and that become registered bidders. I mentioned that there were a few differences between bidding in round one and bidding in round two and subsequent rounds. So in round one, it's very simple, just stating a number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at the going price for the round. Same thing for round two, really. So a bid is always that number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at the going price for the round. And what a bidder can do in round two compared to round one is either leave the bid unchanged or reduce the number of tranches that the bidder is willing to supply. And if the bidder does that, we say that the bidder is withdrawing tranches from the auction. And when a bidder is withdrawing tranches from the auction, then a bidder will be submitting an exit price, and I'll talk about that in just a second. Now, a note that one of the things that a bidder cannot do, as we discussed previously, is to increase the number of tranches that the bidder bids. And another way to say the same thing is to say that a bidder cannot bid more than its eligibility. In round one, a bidder's eligibility is the initial eligibility that is determined by the indicative offer at the maximum starting price. In round two, the eligibility for a bidder, so the maximum number of tranches that the bidder can bid, is simply the number of tranches that that bidder bid in round one. So the bidder can bid that number or a smaller number of tranches for round two. In round three and all subsequent round, then the eligibility for a bidder in a round is the eligibility in the prior round less any tranches that were withdrawn from the auction. What this means is that if a bidder withdraws tranches from the auction, the bidder loses the ability to bid on those tranches for the rest of the auction. So the bidder loses the eligibility associated with those tranches, and the bidder will also be required to submit an exit price for any tranches that are being withdrawn from the auction. So again, that means bidding on fewer tranches in this round than in the prior round. What an exit price is really a final and best offer for the tranches that are being withdrawn. So in the example that we have here, in round one, the bidder was bidding on three tranches. As the price went down in round two from $65 per megawatt hour to $61.75, the bidder bid on two tranches, so fewer tranches, withdrawing one tranche from the auction. And the best and final offer then for that tranche is going to be in between those two prices. So the bidder is saying that that third tranche, the bidder is willing to bid it at $65. The bidder is not willing to bid it at $61.75. So there's some price in between. Not $61.75, they're not willing to bid it at $61.75, so higher than that, but up to $65, that's the best and final offer for that tranche. So in the example that we have here, the bidder is choosing $62.37. So again, just a reminder that the prices we're using are illustrative in this presentation. So that process is going to continue over the rounds. Bidders are either going to bid the same number of tranches they did previously, or they're going to withdraw tranches from the auction. The auction continues as long as there's excess supply, that is, as long as there are more tranches bid then there are tranches available. So when the auction closes, then there's 22 cases. Either the number of tranches bid is going to be exactly equal to the number of tranches available, or there's going to be fewer tranches bid at the going price than there are tranches available. Corresponding to these two cases, there's going to be two different auction clearing prices, always a uniform clearing price, so always the same clearing price for all tranches in the auction. When tranches bid are equal to the number of tranches available in the last round, the auction clearing price is the price in that final round. Otherwise, it's going to be the lowest exit price that was submitted by a bidder at which all tranches available are filled. So a quick example of what we mean by that. So in the example that you have here, the auction is going from round 11 to 12. The price is going down from $39.42 to $38.68. And we're just looking at three bidders, the three bidders that withdrew tranches in that final round. So bidder A withdrew two tranches, bidder B one, bidder C two. We know that there's a tranche target of 25 tranches, and we are three short of that target in the last round. That is, there are 22 tranches bid for that target of 25. The way we fill that tranche target is simply by price priority. So we know there are 22 tranches that were bid at the going price of $38.68. So those are taken to fill the tranche target. The next two are those that are submitted at the lowest exit price, which here is $38.69 provided by bidder A. And finally, so that gives us two of the three tranches we're missing. Finally, the third tranche would be the tranche submitted by, where the exit price submitted by bidder B is $38.99. So that's the lowest exit price that is needed in order to make sure that all the tranches available are filled, and that would be the auction clearing price in that case. Now, of course, no price is final until there is commission review. All auction results are subject to commission review on the basis of the reports that are provided by the auction manager and the consultant to the commission. The commission has a two business day window from the conclusion of the auction to review those results. And among the reasons that the commission may reject the result would be that the auction violates a specific rule in a manner as to invalidate the auction, or if the auction was not oversubscribed on the basis of the indicative offers received in the Part 2 application, or if there were not four or more bidders, or if a bidder actually won more than 80% of the tranches available at the start of the auction. Now, a couple of notes on what could happen if not all the tranches are procured at the auction, or if there is a supplier default. There are contingency plans that are part of the CBP rules that deal with those particular situations. If not all tranches are procured at the auction, basically tranches are going to be rebid in the next auction. However, AEP Ohio would be procuring in PJM administered market supply for those tranches between the time that the supply period starts and before those tranches are successfully rebid. And if the rebid tranches are not filled, then again AEP Ohio would procure supply in PJM administered markets. In the case of a supplier default, then AEP Ohio would procure supply in PJM administered markets until the tranches can be rebid. That's assuming, of course, that there is a subsequent auction that's scheduled in which those tranches can be rebid. And the tranches are only rebid if there is more than 6 months left in the supply period as of the date of that next auction. So That gives you a little bit of an overview of the auction mechanics and the auction process, including the commission review of the results. Just a little bit more now on the practicalities of bidding, that is going over a little bit of the bidding methods, the system requirements for participating in the auction in terms of submitting your bids online, as well as a couple of precautionary notes. So in terms of the basic methods, as I said, primary methods is for bidders to submit their bids online. There is a trial auction on September 4th, and that is really your opportunity to practice and to ensure that your system are ready and adequate for participation in the auction. If you do have problems in submitting your bid online for whatever reason, we will have technical assistance standing by, and the backup procedure is for you to submit your bid by phone. What that is going to mean is that you will have to submit credentials so that we can identify you as a bidder. And once we've identified you as a bidder, then the technical assistant will enter the bid in that same auction software on your behalf. So that means that whether you're submitting your bids online yourself or you're submitting bids through the backup bid procedure, one way or another, those bids are submitted through the auction software. So whether you're submitting the bid yourself or through the backup procedure, the bid that counts and the valid bid is going to be the last bid that's submitted and verified in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software. While the bidding phase is open, you are able to revise your bids. Now, we will provide you with an auction schedule, and you will also have that auction schedule available to you through the auction software, and it's your responsibility to get a bid in on time. And to that end, we will go through in the next slide the requirements of the system to make sure that you know what they are and that you can minimize any chances of technical difficulty during the auction. If you are providing a backup bid, it's also your responsibility to provide a bid that's complete and consistent with the CBP rules. So for example, if you are withdrawing tranches from the auction, that you have an exit price ready for those tranches, or last and final offer for the tranches that you are withdrawing. The system requirements for using the auction software are really minimal. That is, it's a standard PC with a standard operating system, either Windows 7 or Mac 10.7. An internet connection, and what we're thinking of here is that you would have primary access through your company's network, and we would suggest that you consider having secondary access through an alternative internet service provider, such as a wireless card, for example. There are browsers that are supported, so the auction software is compatible with those web browsers, including Internet Explorer 9 or later, as well as the most recent versions of Firefox and Safari. And we certainly suggest that you check which version is installed on your computer and that you make sure that you are using a supported web browser. Otherwise, the auction software may not work properly. In terms of backup system, certainly having a backup laptop and backup internet service provider, as we mentioned, will help minimize the chance of any technical difficulties that would impair your ability to bid during the auction. We also would suggest that you have bidding teams that have access to your auction credentials in two different geographical locations, so that if there is a problem in one location, that you will still be able to submit bids. So that's a quick tour of the bidding methods and the requirements for submitting bids online through the auction software. Now, a little bit of forward-looking information and reminders about the website. So we mentioned this was the third of four auction plans under the CBP for the ESP2. The timeline for the fourth and last energy-only auction is provided on the next slide. The schedule is somewhat accelerated to make sure that we can fit in the auction after the close of this auction, and the auction again, the auction date is September 9th, but before the holidays. So there's somewhat of a shorter time frame between part one, part two window. Finally, just a couple of reminders about the CBP website, and we've already provided you with the address and some screenshot of that website, aucohiocbp.com. Just a note about where to find documents, where to find data, and finally how to submit questions. So that's the home page of the CBP website. On the left-hand side is a navigation bar where you can navigate to documents by clicking on information, and that information tab will provide all relevant documents that we have already spoken about for this auction, in particular the CBP rules, the MISA, as well as qualification information. So the requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 application you can look at in advance, because the equivalent paper form of the Part 1 and Part 2 application have been posted so that you can review those requirements. The credit instruments for the auction are posted as well, the communication protocols, which were part of AEP Ohio's filing, as well as the associated bidder rules and a glossary of key terms that can be useful as you navigate through the rest of the auction documents. There's also a data room that is updated on a monthly basis, and where AEP Ohio provides hourly energy and customer counts. Those are separated in the CSP and OPCO rate zones, are separated between SSO and CREST providers, and also provided by customer groups as well as on an aggregate basis. That historical data begins in June 2010. As I said, it's updated monthly on the 20th, and we also provide historical unaccounted for energy. Finally, as was mentioned before, you can ask us a question through the CBP website or via email. If you choose to do it through the CBP website, you can click on the Contact Us tab and then ask a question. Our practice is to answer questions within 2 business days. So you will receive an email from us, first of all, acknowledging that we received your question, and then with a response also via email to the questioner. Then the question and the response are posted as an FAQ to the CBP website to provide equal access to all information to all bidders. You can submit that question through the website, as I said, or you may also contact us via email. And again, that email address is aep-cbp@nera.com. To contact us during the application process, so starting at the beginning of the Part 1 window, you can contact us by phone in addition to via email. And for those bidders that are submitting their pre-bid security using a letter of credit, again, the only hard copy document required by the application process, we provide you here with the address at which to send that pre-bid letter of credit. That concludes the second portion of the presentation.
And to submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen. Select all panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question. Again, to submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A box on the right-hand side of your screen. Select All Panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your questions. You will now be placed on a music hold for just a moment while our presenters review any questions. We will return momentarily. Go ahead.
Thank you. So welcome back. We did not get any questions through the webcast interface, so I will thank everybody for their participation today and remind you that if you do have questions about any aspect of the presentation or any aspect of the CBP, you can ask those questions through the form on our website or by email to us at abp-cbp@nira.com. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you again for joining us today. This does conclude today's web conference. You may now disconnect.